Welcome back to the Saturday Show here on 97.5 The KSL Sports. I'm Michelle Bodkin there, Jake Hatch here, and we are pleased to welcome in now Ben Anderson. Actually, typically he's sitting in Michelle's seat during this time period throughout the week from 10 to noon. He's one of the co-hosts of Jake and Ben, as well as the Utah Jazz Insider for KSLSports.com. Ben, thanks for taking some time on the Saturday morning. How are you, my friend?
Good. Happy to jump on.
Absolutely. So I want to start here. Last night, Utah Jazz in action against the Los Angeles Clippers. If I'm not mistaken, you correct me if I'm wrong here, it's the final game technically of the in-season tournament for the Utah Jazz. I guess it's consolation play in a way. Give me your thoughts on how things went. Kawhi Leonard went off and the Jazz fall once again.
Yeah, the Jazz have been the victim of two big-time superstar performances in their last two games. Yeah. Obviously, Luka Doncic had the 29-point triple-double in the first half and finished with 40 points. And then Kawhi had 41 last night. So the Jazz right now, certainly without Lauri Markkanen, aren't really equipped to deal with those types of superstar-level games. And even when Lowry's been out there this year, the Jazz really have not been able to compete in that. So when these teams are healthy and engaged and playing at that level, those are games I don't think the Jazz are really going to win very often this year.
What is it that's changed from last season to this season? Because I think everyone was expecting them to really struggle last year, and they didn't. And now this year, I think people were expecting them to kind of get better, and now they're struggling.
Yeah, I think Mike Conley was a much better parachute than people thought, where the Jazz had kind of jumped out of the plane by trading both Rudy Gobert and Donovan Mitchell and thought, okay, well, they're just going to fall flat on the ground. And Mike Conley kind of slowly helped them fall to the ground. And then once they traded him in February, the team really kind of fell apart, and we didn't see it because they were resting Jordan Clarkson and Colin Sexton was hardly playing and Lauri Markkanen and Mitch missed a bunch of games late. So we didn't realize exactly how bad the roster was or how poor they were going to perform when they were fully healthy this year and back out there. And then on top of it, they've just had some guys who I think have been slightly disappointing. I think Walker Kessler is not playing as well as people had expected and even as well as he had at times last year. And I don't know if that's just a sophomore slump or if he just had a big rookie season. But there are things like that. Jordan Clarkson's not as good this year as he was last year. That have really hurt the Jazz. And they're just terrible on the road. I mean, that's one of the other issues. They're young, and they can't win on the road. In fact, they're the worst road team in the NBA now after the Rockets won in Denver last night. So they've got the worst net rating away from home. They have 10 losses, which is the most away from home. They've got only one win, which is tied for the fewest. So they are just not a very good team, certainly when they're playing away from Salt Lake City.
Well, if I'm not mistaken, Ben, I think two of their next 10 or so are at home. The rest of those on their road. So that's the kind of recipe for disaster right now.
Yeah, Monday they're in Oklahoma City, who's been very good. They're a top three team in the West right now. They do play the Knicks, I think they
Correct.
Get for a home
yes.
game, and the Knicks are going to make the playoffs in the East. And then, they've got that big six-game road trip or five-game road trip, which they ought to be able to pick up some wins because they play in both San Antonio and Detroit, who are the two worst teams in each division. But the Jazz, truthfully, are closer to the bottom of the West than they are even the 10th seed right now in the Western Conference. So when you assume they can get wins on the road, even against the worst teams in the league, like they've already lost to Memphis. They were Memphis's first home win of the season. They've lost to Portland and were down by 32 in the fourth quarter. So while I say they should snap, you know, this road losing streak that they're on and how bad they've been, it's actually not guaranteed because they've been so poor away from home.
So, I mean, big picture, looking ahead, what is the game plan here? Do you just let it be and continue to kind of struggle and be bad, or do you try and fix it and put something together that's maybe a little respectable?
Yeah, I don't think we're going to see. I mean, I don't think they're going to be this bad all year with this roster. I suspect when Lauri Markkanen comes back, maybe they can bounce back and start to play, you know, close to 500 basketball for a little while. But you don't want to finish the season, you know, what are they, 8 games under 500 right now? Honestly, that's just not good enough because you might end up having, you know, the 11th worst record in the NBA, which if that's the case, you have to trade your first round pick to the Oklahoma City Thunder. So at some point, I think they are going to fully pull the plug on the season. They kind of did it last year in February when they traded Mike Conley and some of their other pieces, Jared Vanderbilt, Malik Beasley. They could do something similar in trading their veterans this year, and that could be anybody from Kelly Olynyk to Jordan Clarkson to Colin Sexton to Talen Horton-Tucker. We'll see who actually sticks around. But at some point, I think they will turn the ball over to, you know, Taylor Hendricks, who played a little bit last night, has been in the rotation for the last 3 games. Maybe even Bryce Sensabaugh comes up and gets some opportunities to play with the main roster. So it will happen eventually. I don't think this is the course they're going to stay on the rest of the year.
Now, Ben, you talk about a guy like Talen Horton-Tucker who could be a trade prospect. that we had Brian Gelsinger, and you heard this clip, I know, we played it as a promo from my show for a week or so, about Brian Gelsinger. They had the trio of Chuckers, as he called them, for Talen Horton Tucker, Jordan Clarkson, and names. But he said, Colin Sexton. Thank you, Christian. But he's talking about the fact that it's kind of stifling, in a way, Keontae George and his development here. Is Keontae still doing what you expect him to do? Do you think it's going to be at some point he's going to hit that quote-unquote rookie wall?
Yeah, I think he's probably hit it in some ways. His shooting percentages are way down. His turnovers are up a little bit. His assists are way down after Lauri Markkanen left the rotation. So, you know, now the good news is Lowry's going to come back and some of those things should be easier for him. But I do think he's kind of hit that point where he may be so overwhelmed with what's going on the floor and so consumed with just like keeping his head above water that I'm not sure how much he's adding to his game every single night, where it felt like those first 10 games of the season, even those first five starts, like you saw something new every game that you hadn't seen previously. And that was really exciting to watch for Jazz fans. I'm not sure he's doing that so much now. It's just like, there's a scouting report on him. Teams know what to take away from him. They're guarding him differently than they used to. And now he's just trying to figure out how to not be, you know, in an overwhelming negative every night that he's on the floor. And this is not a knock on a rookie in Keontae George. The Jazz aren't a very good team, and he's having to start at point guard. But he has one of the worst plus-minuses in the entire NBA for the full season. And, you know, that's been aided. He was minus 48 in Detroit or in Dallas the other night. He was minus 25 last night, which I think was the worst on the team. So he regularly has the worst plus-minus on the floor. And if he was, you know, 3, 4, 5 years in the league, I think that would be a bigger red flag. It's not in his rookie season. But you can see that, like, teams recognize that when he's on the floor, they're going to perform well. The Jazz are struggling when he's on the floor, even if the offense looks a little bit better. He just doesn't have some of the veteran experience and doesn't know all the tricks to, you know, make life a little bit easier on himself. And that's where had he gone to the G League, life would have been a little bit easier for him because he could have learned more things, continued to add things, which I've seen from Taylor Hendricks from his first game of the season where he was, you know, basically unplayable to now where I know he didn't score last night. He didn't really even record all that many statistics, but he actually wasn't like this huge negative when he was on the floor. He didn't make shots, but it wasn't like LA was able to just attack him and score on him every single time he was on the floor or he was turning the ball over. He actually wasn't that bad. So those are places where I think Keontae George would have benefited from more experience. And as far as the rookie wall goes, I don't know if the bottom's ever going to totally fall out, but it feels like he's hit a minor plateau.
Will Hardy maybe had like the quote of the year. I'm still chuckling over that. Obviously can't say it on air. Was that one of the better coaches' comments, post-game comments you've ever heard in covering this team?
Yeah, I mean, I compared it to something, you know, something Frank Layden would have said. I mean, this has skipped several coaches. Quinn Snyder certainly was never that candid. He was kind of funny, but he never would say something like that. Mm-hmm. And Jerry Sloan was usually pretty serious. And, you know, Jerry was funny after big losses, too. You know, he had a very notorious quote after the Jazz lost by whatever it was, 36 or 40 to the Bulls in the finals, where he picked up the box score and he asked if that was the final box score, which was a very funny line in the finals of the worst loss of his career. But, yeah, that quote from Will Hardy is an all-timer. And, you know, I think he wasn't trying to be funny necessarily, which I think is good that he can call it out. But also, you know, we talked to him the next day at practice and he just said, you know, we've moved on. We're just, you know, there's not a whole lot you can take from that game. You just try and play the next game, the next outing. And actually, I thought the Jazz were better last night, certainly, than they were in Dallas.
Ben Anderson joining us, of course. I hosted Jake and Ben during this time slot during the week, Monday through Friday. He's also the Utah Jazz insider for KSLSports.com. All right, Ben, so you talk about the fact that you feel like at some point the Jazz may pull the plug on this because, yes, they do have the whole thought of, okay, do we want to convey that pick to Oklahoma City? Do you think that would come similar to what they did last year where they kind of pull it in February around the trade deadline? When do you think they would ultimately say, you know what, we're bagging this?
Yeah, and the Jazz kind of did it in steps last season. You know, January 3rd, Ochai Agbaji gets called up from the Stars and stays in the rotation for the rest of the year. And it's just kind of out there through, you know, thick and thin. They just played him and he was a major rotation piece, even when they still had, you know, Mike Conley and still had Malik Beasley and still had Jared Vanderbilt. He was playing and Walker Kessler was a full-time starter at that point. So that's what, 3 weeks away from right now is that January 3rd stretch where maybe they make the same switch where Taylor Hendricks comes up full-time and the Jazz say, you know, it doesn't really matter. They're eight to 10 games below 500, maybe even more. And they're not going to try and rebuild this season or get back to the playoffs. And so you would rather just have Taylor Hendricks out there. It's going to up fan interest. He's going to develop more when he's playing in the NBA. If you can give him 20 minutes a night, playing next to some of the better players in the league, like Lauri Markkanen or Kelly Olynyk, and he can learn some of the tricks of playing with pros. You might see that as soon as January. And then, yeah, you don't have to trade anybody until the trade deadline. So you can honestly just call around the league, see what's out there, and just say, hey, you know, X, Y, and Z player are available, or more likely in the Jazz scenario, like, hey, there's only three guys who we're not going to trade. Give us your best offer for everybody else. And if we think that's worth it, the trade deadline, they'll pull the trigger on those trades. I think we will see that where the team kind of fully unplugs close to the All-Star break, but I bet you start to see parts of it in January.
I know that we're kind of saying we think this team will eventually pull the plug, and that it's not really exactly a goal to be good this year. But in the future, what does this team have to do in order to get back on track, in order to be in the playoff conversation and maybe look more like the team that I think Jazz fans want them to look like?
Yeah, they need an identity, which they really don't have this year. And one of the things Will Hardy has said earlier this season, and it wasn't a shot at Lauri Markkanen, don't confuse me by saying that. It's just he kind of acknowledged that they don't have a real leader on this team. Mm-hmm. And they have lacked leadership this year, especially when they're on the road. And he had said this when Lauri Markkanen, I think, was in the lineup still, that that they don't know how to stop the bleeding in games yet. And they've actually asked Keontae George to do it in his first season. That's a lot to ask of a 20-year-old. When you have other guys who have made all-star teams and, been around the league for 10 years or have made $100 million in their career, that's a lot to ask Keontae George. So they do need a leader. They need some more experience of guys who have made the playoffs. They tried to do this thing, I think, where, Lowry's never made the playoffs. Colin Sexton's never made the playoffs. Jordan Clarkson's never been the best player on a playoff team, though he's made some playoff runs with the Jazz before. John Collins has really not done much in the playoffs ever in his career. So they've gone out and got a bunch of guys who haven't won at a high level, but have produced and tried to see, I think, if that could build a winning team, and it hasn't so far. So you may have to go pick up some more winners and some more leaders to help you build your identity, and that's going to take veteran players. But honestly, if you're developing another top 10 pick this season in Taylor Hendricks and another one next year with whoever you draft this summer, you may even be drafting another top 10 pick next year. I mean, it just might be a couple of years before you're in that spot where you're competing.
All right, Ben. So now as the Jazz look, as Michelle lifted the lid on it, looking towards the future here, is there a player? I know that you do a lot of draft coverage. Have you started looking at draft stuff yet, or is it still too far in the future in your mind to start looking at draft prospects? I saw last night that Danny Ainge was apparently in Las Vegas watching guys like Cooper Flagg, who's part of the 2025 draft down there in Las Vegas. But are you already looking at the draft, or are you still holding off for now?
I will skim through it. I'm looking at a lot of the mock drafts that have come out. And the funny thing about this year's draft is, like, the top 10 is just totally different on everybody's
board. It's a jumbled mess. You're right. I've seen it, too.
Which is, last year at this point, we knew Victor Wembanyama was going to be one. We assumed Scoot Henderson was going to go two. He ended up going three. And Brandon Miller was kind of starting to make his headway and start to push up to the top three, top four, top five. He ended up going number two overall. So we knew the Thompson twins were going to be up there as well. Like, we had a pretty good idea of what that top four, top five was going to look like. And it stayed pretty consistent all year. It was just a matter of the order of like Brandon Miller or Scoot. This year, it's just not like that at all. There's true debate at who's going to be number one. Is that guy going to be available at six? Is the guy at 10 going to be available at four? Like, it's all over the place. So honestly, I have not started watching these guys. And I prefer to watch them honestly at the end of the year, at the end of the college season. And there's even a couple of international guys this year and some G League Ignite guys. But I like to watch at the end of the year when I can pick a few specific games I want to see versus, random December game against whatever opponent. So I really haven't watched it yet. And I think it's going to be difficult for fans who do try and put together, their idea of who they'd like to see the Jazz draft, because it's going to change so much between now and June.
All right. Well, Ben, appreciate all your coverage, all the work you're doing over there at KSLSports.com, and obviously what you're doing with Jake. By the way, is he still treating you well? I know that I see you guys every day, but is he still being nice to you?
He never has, and he never will.
Okay, fair enough. All right. Well, that's what we like to hear. All right, Ben, thanks for taking the time. We'll talk with you soon, all right?
See you guys. Thanks.